Is that Uyghurs? Yeah. Okay.
We're in Uyghurs.
I'd like to call the education policy to order on Wednesday, March 5th. Our first bill today is Senator Rummel with Senate File 2882. And I understand that a number of members have bills in other committees, so there will be people coming and going. So I appreciate everyone being here, and we have a full agenda, so we will be trying to keep to our timelines. First is Senate File 2882, Senator Rummel. I know that we've had some testimony on the school report card, so would you like to begin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's hard to know who was at the table last Wednesday and who's new, and so I'm going to go through my introduction very quickly. I hope you will accommodate me and let Dr. Heisted present the growth model in detail, because that's the heart of the bill. And then the other testimony will be kept short. So, first of all, in a broad brush stroke, this bill is a response to parent and public interest in having fuller disclosure regarding what's going on in their schools. Currently, the focus of our school report cards is on the AYP reporting, as mandated by No Child Left Behind. That information remains on the report card. And yes, it is useful information, but it is only partial information. It identifies schools where a population within the school may not be making annual yearly progress. On occasion, it may appear to the public that that information is not only partial, but it can be misleading. It makes it sound like the whole school is not making annual yearly progress, when in fact it's only a small population within the school. And so parents are asking for more complete information. Remember, when I started out the task force this summer, we were talking about, do we value what we measure, or do we measure what we value? And so during our summer interim hearings, we heard a lot about what do our stakeholders value in public education? And it seemed to us that three big themes came forward. They value ongoing learning. They value that children are learning something. They value that children are on track for either going to college or onto work. And they value that schools are not only rigorous and relevant, but that there are relationships in the school that keep students engaged in their learning and keep them in school. And so what the report card bill does is it puts a measure on those three values. The first measure is a growth model, and Dr. Heisted will talk to you about that. The second measure is a national measure, nationally recommended and also locally researched, that following coursework, the kinds of courses students take, is a good indicator, a very good indicator of success, both in college and in work. And the third item is a student engagement model. And this is the one that's least formed. The bill asks for the commissioner to work with a group of stakeholders in shaping it. And so at this point, that is something that comes out in 2011. There'll be work done in the interim to make sure that all stakeholders have a say in how that student engagement item will work and whether or not we will even have it. So that is the third item in the bill. Since we last met, we had a very productive meeting with the Minnesota Department of Education and the commissioner. And I can't tell you how appreciative I am to the commissioner and to all the people in this staff at MDE. They worked very hard, and they gave us a lot of great new language. The amendment I'm going to offer today captures some of that language. And since we put the amendment together, I'm confident that we are very close to the department in the first thing, which is the growth model, in the second thing, which is the course taking. The department would probably prefer that we did not have the student engagement, and I think, for my intent in the bill, that I'd like to hold on to that. at least for now, and to hear from all of you on that item. So again, thanks to the commissioner, and I'd like to offer, Madam Chair, the A4 amendment, and rather than work through it line by line, let me tell you what we've done. The first thing we've done is part of the growth model. The legislation asks that criteria established for identifying schools and school districts that demonstrate growth. To make this term more consistent with the thoughts that the work group produced regarding the growth-based value-added model, we are amending the word exceptional, and we are using accelerated growth. And I think that's page 2, line 4. We delete exceptional, and we add accelerated. On page 6, line 11, the commissioner was concerned with the language responsible citizenship, and so we have addressed this by removing the word responsible and inserting, as the commissioner asked, the cross-reference to the academic standards and graduation requirements for social studies. Item 3, the commissioner pointed out that the use of the 10th student gender category may cause confusion or may allow for only one gender to be represented. And so we have corrected that, and the document will take into account both the female and the male gender. Item 4, the suggestion of Education Minnesota on page 10, line 9, that summary data be included in the report card instead of an aggregate score for purposes of reporting student engagement. We've taken care of that. On page 10, line 17, the commissioner pointed out that a report by August 1st may not allow the department sufficient time to evaluate best practices learned from the schools that have demonstrated accelerated growth. And so we have agreed with the commissioner, and we have deleted the August 1 date and simply require that we hear from the commissioner annually. And finally, under Section 8, beginning on page 13, we have agreed with the commissioner that paragraph B should be deleted, as it makes an additional requirement on the department to expand a high school student data system to report preparation and rigorous coursework measures and facilitate additional research on college readiness. The department has been coordinating their various data systems, and they are working to include a common course catalog as part of that data system. The work of the department in this area, in addition to a Senator Bonoff bill in the area of technology, are likely to sufficiently satisfy the bill's intent for that paragraph. So we have deleted that paragraph. So I move the A4 amendment.
We're just checking on a quorum, just briefly. Why don't we keep going, and we will work on that quorum and come back and pass this amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We do have, so there is a quorum, or people have at least been here and left, and so Senator Rumble moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign, and the motion passes.
Madam Chair, at this point, I would like to ask Dr. Heisted to review the growth model. There were some objections earlier that the growth model that we were proposing did not line up or did not give information about the students' progress toward meeting the standards on time. And so if you listen carefully to the way Dr. Heisted presents his data, you will see that we have conformed with what the commissioner asked us to do, and that information will be presented.
Madam Chair and Senators, my name is David Heisted. I'm the Executive Director of Research Evaluation Assessment in Minneapolis Public Schools, and I'm pleased to come back and go through the growth model and then answer your questions fully. The legislation outlines a multiple measure system that will report on the high standards, and the AYP language will still be intact. Well, we expect all students to be at the standard by 2014, but it adds an additional component, which is measuring each individual student's progress over time. And so we'll be able to look at value-added gains in both reading and math, and we'll also, in the bill, of course, advocating development of engagement indicators. We feel that this will add a degree of equity to the current report card, where we can see that the gains that are made not just for students who are below the standards, but also for students above the standards. Currently, the No Child Left Behind law doesn't report out on the growth for students above the standards already. As long as you get over the bar, that's sufficient. But this will enable us to look at high-performing students as well as students who are not yet at the standards. And we'll be able to look very closely at the achievement gaps on the same students across time. It's a much more precise measurement of changes in student gap than to look at this year's third graders versus last year's third graders, for example. So the AYP model of measuring progress uses different cohorts of students across time. The growth model looks at the same students of progress across time who are continuously enrolled in the school. And finally, this model will enable the state to celebrate schools that are making great performance throughout the state. We refer to those schools in Minneapolis as beat the odds schools. These may be schools with very high poverty and high percentages of English language learners, etc., but the growth that they're making with those students from year to year is tremendous, and we can learn a lot as a state from these exceptional schools, and then try to replicate those strategies and really have this drive improvement, educational improvement across Minnesota. We do want to distinguish students on the standards and on growth, and the depiction of the model is in this chart that we presented briefly last time, but we can go in a little bit more depth here. If you look at the bottom left-hand quadrant, these would be schools that are low on achievement level. They haven't met the standards. They're also very low on growth. These are the schools that need intensive immediate assistance. And in Minneapolis, we have reconstituted several schools. We've changed principals, staff, to do what's necessary immediately to help these very low-achieving, low-growth schools. On the other quadrant up in the upper right, we have the high-achievement, high-growth schools. Those are schools that are hitting the standards for all students and accelerating growth for students at the top and the bottom. And we want to let those schools be free to continue their great work, and we want to learn from them. But the schools on the bottom right-hand quarter, these are those schools that might have intense poverty, a lot of diversity. They may not have hit all their standards in every cell of the AYP, but if you look at their growth for students of color, students in poverty, et cetera, you may find that they're making tremendous growth on a year-to-year basis. And these are some of the beat the odds schools that we want to learn what are the strategies that are used with the students in poverty, the students of color, to produce these tremendous levels of growth. So there's also a upper left-hand quadrant, and these are schools that No Child Left Behind doesn't talk about, and very few districts are currently able to identify. Those would be schools where they're hitting the standards okay, and in general, students may be coming into the school district or the school above average, but those students may not be making the kind of exceptional growth that these high schools are making. And so we can give them encouragement to do better for all students as well. So it enables a district to look at their schools with these two dimensions in mind. It enables the schools to identify and highlight the practices in these tremendous growth schools and then try to replicate that growth. We will be using the vertically linked scale score that the State Department has put together in the last 2 years for the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments. We don't have to wait for another assessment to be adopted by the state that has a growth scale built into it, because the state has worked very diligently to create a vertically scaled score. It's like the growth or the height charts that you would see in a doctor's office. You can compare the progress of individual students or groups of students versus what typical progress is. And you can also look at what exceptional progress is and see what percentage of the students in your school by each of the categories are making exceptional growth, typical growth, or less than typical growth. So we would divide the norming group into three categories, and we would look at the previous two school years, 2006 to 2007, using the MCA 3 as the baseline. And then we would look at individual and school performance versus the baseline. I should mention that the department has already created an individual school report that will go to parents this year that has where the standards are on this growth scale and where each individual child's growth is. So that's already in place. Now we would be extending that to the report card where we can report on progress for groups of students. As I indicated, 33% of the students in the norm will be below expectation, 33% will be at about the state norm, and 33% would be above. And that's where we want to see the acceleration. We want to see more and more schools by each of their subcategories making exceptional growth. The state report card might look something like this, where in the red, you see the percentage of students above typical growth. 33.3% would be above, 33% would be at, and 33% would be below in the state norms. A district, however, might look something like this, where only 20% of the students are making accelerated growth and 40% making state norm growth. Well, we want to see this accelerated growth increase, especially for a district that would be starting well below the standards. And then you have an example of a school here where 45% of the school is making exceptional growth and 30% making typical growth. This would be a school where you could go out and find out from the teachers what's happening in the school. Now, you would do the same type of analysis for each of the subgroups. So another example would be for the free or reduced price lunch students. You can see in the state, our free and reduced price lunch students are not doing as well. Only 28% of the state are making exceptional growth. For this particular district, 34% are making exceptional growth. So they're getting closer to what you would expect from the norms. But here's a school where 55% of the students who are receiving free and reduced price lunch are making exceptional gain. Here's a superstar school working with their students in poverty and showing great gains. So this is the type of school again. And you might have the same thing. You might have schools serving Hispanic students in outer Minnesota. You might have suburban districts that are making great progress with another subgroup, and we would be able to look across all the types of schools in Minnesota and see what kind of performance is taking place. We do advocate this as a basic form of value added, and value added is defined in the bill as making progress better than the baseline. There are more sophisticated models of value added, but they're difficult to understand and to communicate. This basic model just looks at how much growth takes place from last year to this year, and then you compare that versus the state typical growth. And other kinds of value added are possible, where you try to separate out parent effects from school effects. You might want to separate out teacher effects from school effects. Those are actually covered under this law. And the definition, it's just for the report card, starting right now, we're advocating the simplest model, the easiest to understand for teachers, administrators, folks on the leadership teams in the schools, and not go to the more sophisticated analyses that you see in some states. So we're recommending the more parsimonious model family members, community members will be able to understand. And this is a part I didn't get to last week when I was here, but I'll just spend a little bit of time with. The original proposal just divided the norms up in two groups. And when I met with the assistant commissioner and we kind of asked questions of this approach, we were wondering if students made typical growth, the way the norms in Minnesota are, at the 50th percentile, would students catch up? If they were below the standards, would they catch up to partially proficient and proficient? And I ran the analysis. I spent a whole weekend, a couple weekends ago, running the data. And what I found out was, here's the red line in the middle. That would be your, the red diamonds at the top here are the proficiency standards. This is what's going to be on the individual report for every parent to see. This is where you'd have to be at proficient or above. The blue line is if I took the median or the average growth that for each grade level and plotted it out and started out at a spot that was below the proficiency standards, would I catch up to proficient at the end of 5 years? And the answer is no. But our hypothesis that this might not be enough growth turned out to be true. And what you see is the blue line here parallels the red diamond line here. And so students would maintain their relative status. If they started at partially proficient, they'd end up at partially proficient. So that's what led us to propose dividing the norms into three groups and emphasizing making greater than state norm growth. So if you made the greater than state norm growth defined as the top 33% of the norming group, you would catch up to the standards after 5 years. Now, that's a very high, ambitious standard, but we felt that that would be appropriate so that students who start below standard and hit that greater than proficiency target for their growth would actually catch up to the standards. So this is what we call the trichotomous model. That is a terminology we won't use in the bill itself, but the idea is we're looking for growth, which right now only 33% of the state is making. We want all students to be making the growth that currently only a third of the students in the state are making. If we do that, we'll be able to hit those high targets in mathematics and in literacy, and we will be able to, you know, be internationally competitive. So I'd be glad to take any questions.
There are questions in her hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Heistad, I appreciate your coming back and trying to clarify this. I'm still not very clear on how this works, and that, frankly, is a concern I have. To me, we have two things that are kind of parallel. We've got an assessment and a method to try to determine achievement. And then we have a desire to report that to the public in some meaningful way. And one of the virtues of that, it has to be relatively clear. I'm not sure that this is passing, at least in my initial look at this, on the clearness test. I'm not sure that I could explain how this is going to work to any parent who came to me as a school board member and say, how does this work? What is this telling me? I'm not sure I could do that. So I think there is, in my opinion, there's a little bit of a problem with that. But I think it also gets at what are we trying to go for? We've talked about for years that we want to focus on achievement. We want to focus on devising some standard and say this is what we want. We want achievement. Now it seems like we're saying, well, we have that, but we also want to have some kind of a growth standard. And they don't seem to be necessarily related. That we could have a school who is not making an achievement standard but is making some growth standard, and that would be perceived or understood to be a good thing, maybe a better thing than achieving the achievement standard. So I'm concerned about the dilution of focus. Are we trying to try to achieve a standard, or are we trying to achieve a pace? And then mm-hmm. just one last question that's related to this is just the determination of what that pace should be. Mm-hmm. Are we saying that we're going to look at, over the course of a year, how quickly a group of students or how much they achieve, the pace of their achievement, and then average that, and then say that that's the standard that all students should be measured against. And this is, goes kind of back to the first thing of how clear is this mechanism going to be. Yeah. So if you can try to address those things, I'm not sure if I'm getting the clarity here on the one hand, and I'm also not sure I'm understanding why when you want to dilute the focus on achieving standards.
Madam Chair and Senator Hahn.
Well, perhaps, Senator Heidstead.
Yes, please.
Just to put that in context, the current report card and some of the current scores that we see compare different groups of kids.
Right.
So that's not clear either. Right. So there's a misinformation there. So maybe in context of that, what we have and where we're trying to go, perhaps?
With the current accountability system, we have this year's third graders compared to last year's third graders. And we say that a school is done better if they have higher percentage of their students that are proficient. If we had a situation in the school where there was no mobility and the students who come into the school are at the same starting levels as the students have always been, that kind of model would work reasonably well. But in most districts, we have some mobility. Some districts, we have tremendous mobility. And the demographics of the students that are coming into districts change fairly dramatically in some cases. So what can happen is that you'll be identified as an underperforming school because the characteristics of the students coming into your district or into your school have changed. And you actually, if you looked at the amount of growth each student is making from one year to another, they could be making exceptional growth. And I saw that the first year that we had the AYP system in place in Minneapolis, we had a school where they were on the AYP list as underperforming for African-American students. But what had happened is a large percentage of the third grade class coming in were Somali students. And they hadn't had students from Eastern Africa before in the school. Those students made tremendous growth from third to fourth grade, but because they start out low, they end up causing the school to be labeled as a failing school. So the demographics have to be controlled for by looking at the same students across time. Now, any kind of educational evaluation, you're interested in how many of the students made the standard, but you're also very interested in how much learning took place. If you're interested in finding out whether the teaching strategies worked, you have to look at the learning increasing. And I use an example, I probably shouldn't, of my own weight. Okay, I have had a problem, especially as things get stressful, I tend to eat a lot. So I finally joined a weight loss club. And if you wanted to evaluate that weight loss club, you could look at the average weights of all the folks in the program this year versus next year, et cetera. But you might miss the fact that all of the folks in that program are declining in their weights, heading towards their targets, but then there's turnover. As they hit their targets, they leave, and you get new people that tend to be a little heavier. So there's an example of the – and the other thing is the height and weight chart would say that, you know, I should weigh 180 pounds given my height, and I'm at 235 now. But in the last 2 months, I've lost 16 pounds. So if you're going to evaluate the health club and say they're doing a good job or a bad job, if you did it on the basis of the average weight, I haven't met the standard. I'm not even close. I'm not even partially proficient. But at least they've encouraged a loss in weight towards the standard. So that's the example I give for why you want to have some value-added indicator when you're measuring the effectiveness of the school. The effectiveness of the school. The individual student, we want to get to the standards, and we hold the same high expectation for all students. But if we're evaluating the instruction in the school, the most fair way to do it is to look at progress across time for those students.
And Madam Chair, and thank you, Doctor. I appreciate that. Thank you for your answer to but still, if we're trying to establish a norm what is the norm? And to go back to your analogy of losing weight, should a person lose 5 pounds a month or 10 pounds a month? Or, yeah. And what is the norm for that for that weight loss? Or what is the norm going to be for growth in academics? And do you have norms by subject? So are we talking, and how, I guess, norm just looking at how much a group of students learn across the state on particular mm-hmm. subjects and averaging mm-hmm. that and then saying that is the norm of growth and then measuring mm-hmm. any particular student or the average of the students in a school against the state average mm-hmm. norm of growth? I mean, I'm not clear on how you're getting this measurement.
And I haven't gone into detail about the norms, but for every single student in the state, there is a cohort of students who start at the same level that they do, in the same grade. So in grade 3, there are students who are getting all of the answers correct on the test. And if you look at how much progress those kids make from 3rd to 4th grade, you know, it might be on average 20 points of growth. And some students would be gaining 100 points. Some might be gaining zero, but the average is 20. So if we went with the average growth, that would be what kids are typically making now who are getting all the answers correct at third grade. But what we're suggesting is we're putting the standard at the top third. The top third of growth for kids that are getting all the answers correct might be 50 points. And so we're not just going to expect 20 points, which is the current average based on the 2006-2007. We're going to expect twice as much growth, you know, whatever that top third group is doing. So across each one of the tests, the reading and the math, we look at the initial starting point of the student. We look at all the students in the state that started out at that point in 2006 and how much growth they made to 2007. And then we set a target, which is where our top third students are in the state in terms of growth. It's a very ambitious growth target. It's not easy to show that kind of growth. If we took just the average growth from 2006-2007, we found that students wouldn't catch up to the standards. So that's why we're expecting this very high point. Now, in the actual report card, what you're going to see is something like this. Simply, what percentage of the students in the school made exceptional growth, made typical growth, or made less than a year's growth, and the parents won't have to know how that was derived. But for anybody who wants to know, there will be a table which will specify for each child's score what would be the expected growth and what would be the 67th percentile growth that we're calling exceptional growth. So there would be a way verifying that you know, your students are actually making tremendous growth.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, I couldn't be more pleased with this bill. I think that it is exactly what we're looking for, and I see it a little differently than Senator Hahn, and so I just wanted to express a different viewpoint about it. I think if we look at the ultimate goal as every child achieving his or her potential, that this is the key to that, and even more than reporting on a school, because I'm interested in learning how each school is doing, because I think that we can learn so much about best practices and what's working. But really what it does to me is it gets at the heart of what we ought to have our eye on, and that is in addition to achieving established standards, which I wholeheartedly agree with Senator Hahn, that we want to make sure that each of our children achieve a Minnesota standard, and or whether that's a federal standard or a Minnesota standard. But what I'm most interested in is, are our students going as far as they can go? Are we taking our very best and brightest and pushing them beyond? And are we finding a way to engage those kids who are falling through the cracks in the middle and moving them forward? And are we closing the gap at the bottom? And unless we're looking at this kind of data, I don't think, number one, that we know, and secondly, I don't think we'll do it, because I think that people do perform to what's measured. And so until we start measuring this, and you will see in my next bill that is being presented that this does completely dovetail with the technology bill, because the technology bill is creating a framework to then use this important data, let the state perform analytics, giving it back to the school districts so that they can see what's working, what's not working, identify some, you know, key growth schools, identify problem areas. And so I think this is the beginning of something very exciting for our state.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Senator Dubanoff. The big picture of the bill is not to in any way undermine the proficiency data that the report card currently has, and under No Child Left Behind. What we are doing is providing complementary, supplementary, contextual information that parents and public have been asking us for a long time. And in the interest of time, we will not do in-depth presentation on the rest of the bill. So if you have other questions, we could move to those. Or
I believe that there are some other people here to testify, Mr. Bartholomew and Ms. Smith, and we have someone else at the table I see as well. Senator Rummel, if you'd like to introduce
him. Have with me Dr. David Johnson, and Dr. Johnson was prepared here to answer questions. If you have questions about the course-taking measure with which the department and we are in perfect agreement, and the student engagement portion. But we weren't going to do a presentation because we're short on time.
Okay. And also Commissioner Segrin would like to respond to the amendment. So why don't we have, at this point, are there other questions for those at the table? Then why don't we have Mr. Bartholomew and Ms. Smith and then Commissioner Segrin come to the table. So. And also Renee Lara from Education Minnesota would also like to respond. And then, Senator Rummel, certainly if you'd like to respond with your testifiers after that, that would be terrific.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Stacia Smith, and I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber is not opposed to growth models, and we've talked to Senator Rummel about this, but we do oppose this bill for two main reasons. First, this model tells parents how their school performance is compared to the state norm. It does not tell parents whether or not that state norm is actually a good score. Second of all, this model fails to show whether students will ever really be proficient in terms of the state standards. Again, we support growth models we'd like to see a growth model that maintains high expectations and is directly tied to our academic standards that were set by our state educators. Such models do exist, and we feel that those alternatives should be looked at instead of this model. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And I'd also like to start out by saying that the partnership is, we have been supportive of the use of growth models in the past. All we've asked, however.
Madam Chair, could you just pull it a little closer to you?
Oh, I thought I finally had it. Sorry.
Well, move it.
More yet. Okay. All we've asked in the past in our support of developing a student achievement growth model is that that growth model be directly linked to student achievement of our state standards, and that we don't lower our expectations for some students based on their demographic characteristics. We've had these two caveats because our state standards are a description of what all kids need to know and should be able to do when they graduate to be prepared for life after high school. It's very important that all kids get to our state standards and above, if at all possible. Because of this, we also need then to keep focused when we communicate with the public about what we are talking about with student achievement. And that, again, is how are kids doing relative to the standards? In addition, as was mentioned earlier, there's a lot of national research and recommendations on when states communicate with the public about school performance that backs this point. The state needs to focus on what's most important and be consistent. And I think, to deviate a little bit, going with the model proposed in this bill deviates from performance relative to the standards, and I'd like to explain that. But as a quick transition, I'd like to show folks what we've already got available to the public and the parents. And frankly, we use this quite a bit, and it's extremely helpful. And I think in your packets you have these two sheets of paper. It's duplex, so one sheet. And what I did... let's see if I got an extra. Yes. What I did is I just took a school. It's a school in the urban area that has 75% of its population is low income, 75% non-white students. And what you can see if you go to this, and this is just a trend analysis for how their kids were doing in math, and when we get this year's results, we'll have a third point on that trend. And you can see that this school has done, not only are they performing above the statewide average, but their growth, if you will, is exceeding the growth average for the state as well as for the district that they're a part of. And I'd mention that this is overall data. It can be disaggregated by ethnicity and income and ELL students. So it can be, I don't want to be flipped, but it can be sliced and diced in a lot of different ways for parents and for others to see how they're doing. And if you want to go back a little bit further, on the back side of that page, this is just for third graders in reading, and it shows the proficiency levels over 4 years, gives you the scale score, and you can see how that school's growth and scale scores has occurred over the last 4 years. And like the other chart, this can be disaggregated by race, ethnicity, income, ELL. You can also compare it with other schools if you'd like. So if we're just trying to look at some simple growth, if you will, over time, the department's website has some very useful information already directly linked to the state standards that's disaggregated and can be used in multiple ways and is really quite very informative. As was mentioned, a growth model can do some additional things, as Dr. Heistad mentioned, and we have supported that. But as Ms. Smith mentioned, we do not have to abandon a direct link to our state standards to come up with a growth model. We can have a link to our standards and student performance relative to that and growth with all the benefits that Dr. Heistad and Senator Rummel have mentioned. The other item in your packet is from Alaska, and it's a growth model that they've developed specifically to recognize high-growth schools, the very thing that's been talked about, beating the odds schools. And it is linked to their state standards, just like ours could be if we wanted to. And I guess the first thing I'd just quickly summarize is you open it up, you get to the value table. And maybe the best way to look at this, there are a lot of numbers. They worked with the stakeholders in Alaska to come up with the values. But if you, and on your left, where it says previous year level, that's where the individual student scored on our standards last year, if you will. And then at the top, it says current year. And if you look at the top, down the proficient column, and you'll see last year they were proficient, this year they're proficient, they get 100 points. But you'll also notice, and this is a very dynamic model in the sense that if last year that student was advanced and this year they slip to proficient, that school doesn't get 100 points. They get something less than that. So there's recognition of students slipping. Conversely, if a school is able to get a student from anything below proficient to proficient or above, you can see they can get up to almost twice, 190 points. So it's a very dynamic system, and it's very much directly linked to a student achievement on our standards. The third page on this, just the computing the index, is how you get to the numbers, basically. It takes four kids, shows where they were last year, where they are this year, you know, the points. They just simply added up the points, divided by the number of elements, and you got a score of 109. So for Alaska, what 109 means is on the last page. And you can see 109 gets that school in the high category, high performance, high growth. And that school would have been recognized under Alaska's program. So this is just an example of a growth model for all the benefits.
Just a question, Mr. Bartholomew. Mm-hmm. Are these proficient and advanced or all these different categories, do they stay the same from year to year or are they bumped up every year?
They would be,
like, are they
Madam
set
Chair.
At some? So are they set like in, because in this model something is set between 2006 and 2007 and we use that until standards are changed. Are these levels set at a certain point and that is used over a course of 3 or 4 or 5 years when a child reaches that? They're not changing at all?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Bartholomew.
A state could have discretion on how they want to do it, but the presumption is, yes, it would be stable. It would be directly linked to the current achievement levels with the MCAs right now.
And is there a bill out there that includes a model like this that we should be looking at?
Not that I'm aware of, though Alaska just passed it 2 years ago. But I bring this up as just an example. As was mentioned, there are a lot of different ways to measure student growth and aggregate it up to the school level, and this is just one. But it's one that directly links. The proficient plus advanced, those are all right in our current lexicon now.
Okay. Thank you very much. When do we have Commissioner Segrin, if she is here?
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
Excuse me. Before you move, Madam Chair, I would like to hear a response from Mr. Heistad, because I am concerned about this issue as well. And I think that I was just sharing with Senator Bonoff that I received recently the report from my younger child, who's very bright. And I was looking at his score and how this, in his report, I had the level of proficiency for him and for the school, and the state was not part of it. And, of course, you know, he's in a school where the proficiency is very high, and his proficiency is high, and I knew the level of the state, and I wonder why that disappeared. And I, you know, I didn't know if I could compare with other kids since our district, you know, has really a low score. And so I would like to hear your response with respect to this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. The model, the Alaska model, has already been proposed and most likely will be accepted under the AYP proposal from the state of Minnesota. At the same time that my growth committee was meeting on the setting up the report card, Assistant Commissioner at MDE was doing the same thing to try to find a model that the feds would accept. And they will accept this model for AYP purposes. And so we do have that model. Yeah, we will. It will be accepted. It has several deficiencies. If you see on the graph here, we have 1,800 scale score points, a range of scores. And that gets boiled down to 5 categories in the Alaska model. And so what you're doing is taking a lot of in-depth information about students and boiling it down. It's kind of like taking a test score and just making it a 3-point scale where you're either failing, you're average, or you're above average. But you can have a lot of growth in the below the proficiency standard and never get any credit for it. In the model that's proposed for Alaska, you only get credit for your growth if the student goes over the bar. And so the state has already spent a lot of time and money to develop a scale score that's much more sensitive to growth than this. And the commissioner has worked very hard to work on a value-added model that can be much more sensitive than the Alaska model. So I think it is an option, and our committee of 5 experts reviewed it, but we We propose the growth model, which is much more sensitive to growth, that gives credit for you if you're above the standard or below standard, and you don't have to cross some invisible magic line to get credit for that growth. So while I've had a number of discussions with Mr. Bartholomew, I don't think, you know, there's a full understanding of why the growth model that the department has already put in place is superior to the more simplistic model that he's proposing. And I will argue that these standards are the highest growth standards that I've seen. Most standards, like the Sanders model, only expects 1 year's growth for 1 year's period of time, whereas we're expecting much more than 1 year's growth. We're expecting growth that's at the 67th percentile. So in response to both that this would be a lower standard, I disagree. I think this is a much higher standard of growth, much more sensitive, and it flows directly from what the commissioner and MDE team have been working on for the last few years.
Are there other questions? All right. Mr. Bartholomew, can we have, I think, our time, because we will continue working on this. We will have further discussions. I'd like the commissioner to come because I think she may have another meeting that she needs to be at as well, if you'd like to just wait a second. Thank you. Whatever. But their concern about is that we don't sacrifice the standards. If you never get to the standard, just keep nibbling.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you,
and
commissioners.
Thank you for allowing me to respond to Senator Rummel's changes in the bill. We have, as she said, been working with her on some suggestions to improve the bill and to respond to some concerns that we have had about the bill. There are still things that we have concerns about that I want on the record. We had suggested that the definitions that are used in the bill be changed because they do not reflect accurately what value added is, what the commonly accepted definition of value added is. We have no problem with the definition of growth, but we think that that definitely needs to be changed to really reflect what value added is. Dr. Heistad is talking about using this as a first step in a value-added system of attributing value to the schools. So I think it's very important that we understand what the definition of that is in relationship to growth. Growth is essential. A growth calculation is essential to doing a value-added system, and that is essential. He talked about a vertical scale score. That's in a longitudinal data system. That is what we have in place. And this is the first step in doing that. And then in that regard, because we are looking at a value-added system that has growth as its basis, there has been language that was stricken that talked about value-added that has been in our law, was agreed to bipartisanly. We did work and suggest to Senator Rummel that it needed some tweaking, which we did offer to her so that it made sense and fit in with her legislation. We are disappointed that that has not been reinstated. In addition to that, Senator Rummel had assured me the last time we were at the table together that in regard to the advisory committee that would be advising the commissioner on setting any kind of performance measurement in the future, that they would be advisory and would be working to recommend, not to actually decide what those standards would be. That's something, again, that has not – we don't have an unelected or unappointed group of people making decisions that where there's no accountability, and that has concerns for me from legal standpoint. But Senator Rummel had assured me that that would be changed, and it has not been changed. I'm disappointed that she deleted in her bill the development of a system where we would have as indicators rigorous course taking, etc. That may be because of the fiscal implications, but we think that that is a good thing, but perhaps because of the fiscal implications, that's why it was deleted. And then we also wanted to clarify whether, I think you said that you had deleted the section that would require the department to also do school improvement support for those schools that were beyond the AYP. And I don't know if I heard you correctly or not. That would be on page 10, lines 23 through 25. I thought you said it was deleted, but I didn't see that deletion in the amendment.
Thank you, Commissioner. On some of these, there are a number of stakeholders we're working with, and I have not heard back from all of them. So the things that I was sure about, I got into this amendment. I think we're going to be together on the definitions. Okay. And the two things you just mentioned, the House is interested in holding on to that language for a while. We believe that for the moment that we are responding to our duty as legislators to make policy, and we're in discussion about how that language. I think it's more a wordsmithing thing and trying to get together on an agreement on the words, and we're still working on it. I promise you, we are working on it. It's trying to get that agreement that we can come to.
Madam Chair, and I want to say that I have really appreciated Senator Rummel's working with us on this. I wanted to, you know, express and make clear to us our concerns as we go forward. We still have concerns also about the rigor of this growth model. We are concerned that if you're using a statewide average calculation, that, for example, if our students next year on their reading or on their math score very low across the state, then what we're saying is that that the average then is going to be very low, and even the growth that they would have, even though the growth would look strong, they might not even be on a trajectory to meet any kind of an MCA2 proficiency. So that state growth norm is dependent on the total performance of our students. So that worries me. Unless, if I haven't interpreted that right, I have strong concerns about that. I hope that we, you know, are going to continue to grapple with that, because I don't think any of us want to have low expectations for our students. So I just feel, you know, I feel passionate about that. I want our kids to succeed, and I want us to, you know, and I know that Senator Rummel does too, and she's attempting to, you know, bring transparency to our system, and also to look at a fair accountability system for our state with growth, and we are wanting that also.
And that's excellent, because we all agree with that. And Senator Bonoff, and then we are going to be taking a vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I was not aware that in this particular model that we would lose that aspect, so I just also want to echo that commitment that we do have both, that we always know where our students fall with regard to a state standard, and we look at growth. And I think that we are in agreement, and as you know, that all of us who have been working on this are in agreement with that.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonoff, I think the confusion is that we would have a proficiency level for NCLB, but the calculation, as I understand it, would be then whatever the average score would be for our students, regardless of where the NCLB benchmark is. We would base growth off of that average, and then there would be, you know, a trajectory to meet that. And if we have really low scores some year and the statewide average is low, and maybe Dr.
We'll
Heisen,
work this
yes,
out. You
please.
Know, we need to work. I think that this bill, we'd like to have some more discussion on, and I'd like to have Mr. Lara come to the table, and then we are going to be taking a vote. But I think what I'm hearing is that there are many issues we want to have continued work on as this bill moves forward. But we've given this over an hour of testimony, and I know there's more questions, and I hope that members will talk to Senator Rummel about this and Senator Hand very briefly.
Well, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that, and I think you're right. The last time we put together a report card, it took the better part of an entire session and a lot of talking around the state, and I think for us to vote on this at this point would be premature. I'm happy to say let's lay this aside and talk some more, but if you're asking us to set aside our questions and vote, I don't think that, well, I'm not comfortable with voting on this yet. I think there are issues that need to be talked about. So if we don't want to talk anymore, which I understand because we got a lot of the things we want to do, but then I would recommend we lay this aside and take it up again when we can have some more opportunity to discuss it.
Senator Rummel, would you like to respond to that question, if we should lay this aside or if you'd like to move it forward to finance, to K-12 finance, E-12 finance?
I would like to move the bill forward. I think that we are closer on language. There are two people I needed to hear from to give me the okay, and we didn't have it in time to work in the amendment. So I think we're very close in most of our language. There will be some things that it's normal for the legislature and the administration not to necessarily agree on things. And so I would like to move my bill forward. I think in the spirit and the overall context of the bill, we are in alignment with what the commissioner wants. We have some language to work on, and in particular the definitions. I think we're very close on the definitions, but I didn't have time to do that. I just found that out.
And Madam Chair, just quickly.
And then I would like to Dr.
Heister. Ten seconds. We had the question last time, and I didn't reiterate it again this time, that the norms would stay the same. They wouldn't change from year to year. They would be based on 2006-2007 gains, which were, you know, I think positive. You know, we didn't go down last year. So the norms we would use would be already fixed, and they wouldn't change again until the commissioner changes the scale score that's used to monitor the progress.
And thank you very much. And Mr. Lara, would you like to respond, and then
yes.
Senator Hinn?
My testimony will be very quick. My name is Renee Lara with Education Minnesota. For the record, we would like to state our support for this legislation, the intent of this legislation, and we would like it to move forward, except for one small provision. And that is found on page 10, line 10.8, paragraph. What this is a provision that says that when reporting student performance, the commissioner annually, beginning in 2011, must include an aggregate score, and that has been changed, showing students' average self-reported sense of school safety, engagement in school, and the quality of students' relationship with teachers, administrators, and other students. It's this measuring of students' relationship with teachers and administrators that we feel could be very problematic because of its subjectivity, and coming up with an aggregate score, of course, would be very, very problematic. Now, the Representative Senator Rummel has, and we very much appreciate this, amended the aggregate score term to summary data. And we're still very uneasy about what summary data could mean, and if it in any way includes numerical measurements that could be compared, where you could compare a school with another school.
Mr. Lara, if this is something I think that we would like to work on some more, we're not going to define it tonight. If you could work with Senator Rummel on it, would you be willing to do that?
And
it sounds like you've had that discussion,
we just wanted to highlight, because it could be some small provision like this could pop up later upon implementation, could cause great problems, and we would not want that to reflect on the rest of the bill, which really does something very worthy, which is to measure growth that gives schools credit for the improvements they've made with students.
Thank you very much. Senator Rummel, do you want to move forward your bill? And then we'll have discussion.
Madam Chair, I lost track of even where I am.
It's Senate File 2882.
Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 2882 be referred to the Education Finance Committee with the amendments as amended, and with the understanding that we will have our wordsmithing done by that time.
And some of these other issues I think that Senator Bonoff raised. Mm-hmm. Discussion on that motion, Senator Hinn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to remind members that this is the policy committee, and the finance committee is going to deal with whatever finance provisions that this bill requires primarily. And yet I would think that the language that is being talked about is policy language, and it should be addressed in this committee. And as I said just a minute ago, the last time we dealt with the state report card, this was a very long discussion that took place very publicly over the course of a number of months, and it was very contentious. And I think the effort to try to change some things in this way with as little discussion as possible is just not doing this a service. I think that we're going to be getting problems by trying to put something in place that we may not understand the full implication of. It's very unclear to me how these norms are going to be calculated, what they're going to measure, how much they're going to divert the focus from achievement or other things. I know the commissioner raised the question, and I raised it last time. We talked that we have language that requires the commissioner to adopt some changes that are recommended by a group that's not defined. I'm not sure how that mechanism works or what the implications of that might be. These are not policy questions for the Finance Committee. They're questions for this committee. And so, Madam Chair, with all due respect, I think that to move this forward is not appropriate unless we think that the Policy Committee really doesn't have any job to do in the discussion of this bill. If we think that all the policy matters are decided, then let's pass it on to Finance. If we don't think so, then the bill ought to stay here until we get that settled. So, Madam Chair, if the motion is to move it forward, I would recommend that we vote no. In fact, I would move that we table the bill.
Senator Erickson Rope, did you have a comment?
A question. I think a motion to table a bill is a higher motion. Is that correct?
Not debatable.
Not debatable.
Okay. So we need to take a vote on the motion to table the bill. Okay. All those in favor of tabling the bill, please say aye. Oh, excuse me? There's no second on the motion to table. Okay. Excuse me. I'm learning here. Is anyone going to second the motion?
Madam Chair, I will second.
Okay, there's a second. And there's no debate. And there's no debate, so all those in favor of tabling the bill, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign?
No.
Okay, Senator Rummel, the bill will be tabled.
I would like to take a division?
Division. With division. All those in favor of tabling the bill, please raise your hand. It is to table the bill here in this committee. Okay. And all those in favor of moving the bill forward, please raise your hand. Okay. The bill will be tabled.
Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Wieger is back.
Members, I believe we each have caucus at 5, and Senator Bonoff, how long will your bill take?
10 minutes.
Okay, I do not believe there's any opposition on your bill, and so it will go to Senate File 3194. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we do understand the need to move quickly. This bill is a bill relating to state and school district technology standards, and I just would like people to know that this is an effort that is a collaboration, that last year we had language that went forward through the legislature talking about the need to have comprehensive technology standards. I think we have all identified that technology can be key for us in achieving and enhancing student learning and accountability, but that there are some gaps between school districts who have great resources and school districts that don't have them. And I know I, for example, brought our committee to Minnetonka to look at our interactive whiteboards and had a strong feeling that that ought to be spread out throughout the state. And so, in addition, as long as we have every school district doing something different, we do not have a cohesive approach to using technology as a tool for analyzing data, as a tool for getting information to parents, and really to promote efficiency and to save resources. So,
actually the department, and I am, your paper says that John Paulson is here, but Kathy Wagner is here on behalf of the department, and she will be speaking. But the department came to myself and Representative Winkler and asked us if we would like to serve on a task force that included technology officers and stakeholders from all over the state. And so we worked all summer and through the fall to create an initiative that this is just the beginning, and I would like people to understand that while it's just a bill, it represents a very broad and far-reaching vision for technology in the state of Minnesota. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to one of our, and our commission, by the way, is the Minnesota Educational Technology Task Force, and Patrick Plant, who I've had the privilege of working with on this commission, is going to give a very brief overview of our work.
Thank you, Senator.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as Senator Boniff has said, the Educational Technology Task Force is a partnership between Minnesota school districts and the Department of Education. And the task force members you'll see on the screen in your handouts included stakeholders from the legislature, from districts themselves and regional cooperatives, as well as members of the Department of Education. And it's been a very collaborative, high-quality process that we have been working through in developing this vision for a partnership, which includes the belief that a strong technology partnership between school districts and the Department of Education can improve student learning. And that is through the creation of some foundation of flexible shared services that the department is positioned well to deliver on in working with districts and regional cooperatives. Those services could include various new business practices or more effective practices that include things like everything from more cost-effective purchase of software or equipment to delivery of digital content within school districts, and also the more effective use of modern analytic tools to inform decision-making. To move this forward for districts and ensure their best use of resources, we really need the establishments of standards for technology for the state itself. And what I'm showing you next is actually a slide that I did show to this committee last year, and it did, I believe, help establish the need for standards in this area. And what it's reflecting is responses from a survey that we conducted on preparedness for online testing. And this represents a third of the state student population in school districts. You'll see that there is extreme concern over the capacity of school districts to advance, both in the equipment area and staffing. And we've been very thankful, of course, that the legislature did approve both last year and this year some one-time technology dollars to assist with that initiative. The second slide is just a slide that shows the actual funding sources and how patchwork they are in Anoka-Hennepin as a school district. And that's the actual funding of the computers that students use in our school district that range in age as well from being new to up to 14, 15 years old. I've been told by many that this financial condition for funding sources is really representative of the rest of the state itself. Next, to tell you a little bit about the strategic plan that MET is recommending for the development of technology services. If you look at the top of this pyramid, of course, what it's all about is improving education. And the next two layers of the pyramid really relate to what districts would do in both the integration of technology in learning on a daily basis and also information literacy and technology skills for students. The next layer is more effective use of data to better support individualized learner success. And then the last two layers of the pyramid are really the ways that the state and department can help us in creating more effective things like better data sharing between schools or between districts or between districts in the state, or more cost-effective, time-sensitive reporting requirements that can be better done with better tools. And then really the last slide I have for you is one that goes through the six different infrastructure standards areas. And by infrastructure, we're using that term very broadly. It includes the teaching and learning areas themselves, like the skills that teachers need to be more effective in delivering instruction, or the skills that students need to be more competitive in a global marketplace. Then the second area are the tools or the software. That can be the computers, projectors, interactive whiteboards, that entire range of equipment that's needed. The third are shared services that we've already talked about a little bit, but they can also include things like infrastructure statewide. The fourth are the best practices for things like technical security, internet safety, and data privacy. Fifth is more effective sharing of data between schools. And then lastly, the physical infrastructure that's needed, the rooms, the cooling, the electrical, to be able to have a quality learning environment using technology. And with that, I'll turn things back to Senator Bonner.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, and at this time I'd like to ask Kathy to talk about the department's view of this initiative.
Ms. Wagner.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the language in this bill does align with the work the department has been doing with respect to the technology task force. MDE also has language in the department policy bill under which we would publish not standards but guidelines to assist districts as they make future investments in technology. We've been advised that the word standards could lead us into fiscal implications, so we're backing off from the word standards to guidelines. But it is the department's intent to move in the same direction to provide additional information next year for the legislature. We want to be able to determine local needs so that the legislature can be fully informed when we're making funding recommendations in the next session.
So just in summary, what we're looking to accomplish is to begin the process of surveying all the districts to find out what do districts currently have, and then establishing guidelines of what we believe all districts ought to be equipped with, and then we will identify funding gaps. And where we identify those gaps, we will, during a budget year, be coming forward with requests for money. But at this stage, there is not a fiscal note because the department has some grants that they currently have to be able to do this initial survey work.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience? Senator Lynch.
Are you ready for discussion, Mr. Chair?
I was going to see if there's any additional testifiers. Okay, Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bonoff. I wonder if we could look at the bill language on line 2.5 through 2.7. I have a little concern with that section, and my concern is this. I think that we all, especially those of us sitting at this table, understand the financial constraints that school districts are under and have been under. But the way that I read this is that financial resources, in addition to state funding, may be utilized to provide these great things for our school districts. And just that concept in and of itself is concerning to me, in that I believe that it is clearly the state's responsibility to fund public education. And I'm concerned that this language perhaps makes it a little bit easier or shrugs some of that responsibility. I don't think that was the intent at all. And I'm wondering, Senator Bonoff, if that section were not included in this bill, is there anything that would prohibit school districts from doing that which is stated in that section?
Senator Bonoff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, so it sounds like your concern that with that in there, it will perpetuate the districts who can do technology referendums rather than the state coming to the table to make sure the funding gaps are filled. Is that your concern?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I think it's much larger than that. It says may use financial resources in addition to state funding, and so your referendum would be a possible example, I suppose, although I think you can argue that.
This is where. Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, you know, I don't have that concern because, for example, last year I carried a bill that allowed us to go out for matching grant money from corporations, and I particularly have met with the High Tech Association where they are willing to consider partnering with the state to be able to ensure that school districts have what they need in this area. So I think we're actually opening a door to use some alternative means of funding, and I think what we're doing here is we're saying, this is a standard, and where there's gaps, we're on the hook for those gaps. Now, we can be creative in coming up with the funding, so I don't know that we're letting the state off the hook. I think that we're putting the state on the hook with this bill.
Sarah Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonner. So back to my original question. If that language were not included in the bill, I believe that districts would have that the same ability. Nothing would prohibit them from entering into discussions with a particular entity, corporation, or foundation, or whatever the case may be. And so I just question whether or not that language is really needed in the bill.
Okay, as the author and...
You know, Mr. Chair, Senator Lynch, I don't feel strongly about it. I think that the thing I like about it is it does keep present the idea that we can be looking at these alternative sources, but I don't think I feel strongly about it.
Sarah Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonner, then, Mr. Chair, I would make a motion that... we amend the bill to delete lines 2.5 through 2.7.
On the amendment, Senator Bonoff, you indicated it could go, but speak for or against the department.
Okay.
Okay, on Senator Lynch's amendment to delete lines 2.5 through 2.7, further discussion? All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Prevails. We now have Senate File 3194 as amended, and we could entertain a motion for passage, and it would go to state and local. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sure. I just want to dive in here for just a second, we talk about standards, or the department talks about guidelines. Are there, if I have the right understanding, is it the task force that will set those guidelines and standards, or standards and guidelines, or where do those standards and guidelines come from? Because we are referencing an expectation, but we don't know exactly what that expectation is.
Mr. Chair, and Senator Stumpf, I don't think we have as yet, until we do the survey work, we don't know, but I'd like to let...
Ms. Wagner.
Mr. Chair, Senator, it's our intention to work with the task force to flesh out the six guidelines that we have in our department bill. So the six areas that Patrick Plant had up on his slide would form the basis for developing more detailed specifications that would form the basis for a yes-no type survey that we would be giving districts. And actually, it's part of their strategic plan. They've been doing strategic planning and technology reporting for several years anyway, just to be able to access federal funds and state funds in this area. What we'd like to do is be able to collect some more specific data to really understand what they have in their technical infrastructure so that when we do get to a funding year, we can make recommendations or give you information about how to make recommendations. So we'd be fleshing out further detail in the area of instructional technology, technology tools. We'd be asking about student-to-computer ratios. We'd be asking about specific network capability. But those are things that would be further detailed with subcommittees of the task force.
Okay.
Senator Wieger and Senator Stumpf, I'm sorry.
Senator Bonner.
The legislature would have the, we would be proposing standards, the task force, and the legislature would be approving standards.
Okay, I can understand that, but there are some fairly significant directives, I guess would be a way of calling them, to districts. And I'm trying to find the one I had. I thought I had circled it, but clause B on page one, the commissioner, in collaboration with the other members of the technology partnership and other interested and affected stakeholders, must establish and then maintain and revise and publish. Nope, that's not it. Anyway, I can understand I guess my concern is that it's kind of like saying you have to do this, but we don't know what it is yet.
Sarah Bonnet.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I would be happy to work with you between now and when it. So actually, it wasn't going to finance. It was going to state and local government.
It's been requested. Yes.
It is going to education finance?
No.
Okay,
state and local.
State and local. Yes. I am willing to make sure this terminology includes proposal language rather than establishing language.
That understanding, we'll entertain a motion.
I move the passage of Senate File 3194.
As amended.
As amended, and be moved to state and local government.
Okay, on the motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion fails. Thank you, Senator Bonhoff. Testifiers. Senator Sachs, you've been very patient. We're going to ask you to be patient a little bit further because Senator Dahl, it's his first bill before our committee, and you had the first bill of the session, I believe, and it's ready for final passage. But Senator Dahl, you put together a great presentation, and we'd like to complete that before 5 o'clock, and I believe, Senator Sachs-Hogg, your bill is ready and not controversial from what we've been told, and it shouldn't take too long before we go to caucus on that. So, Senator Dahlin, if you could have your testifiers join you. And welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chair, committee, thank you very much and appreciate that. We will. I'll tell these people 10 minutes, so hopefully they can do that. I know how committees work. I'm here to move Senate File 3029, and I do have an amendment. Should I do that right away?
Yes, if it could be distributed, and it's in the packet, and it's moved by Senator Olson, the A...
1214 amendment.
The A1214 yeah. Amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed, carry. The bill's in the form. The
okay.
Author.
We'll leave it as is. Okay. We can work that. We'll leave that as is. Okay.
Please proceed.
All right. This is very quickly. I would establish a 5-year pilot program allowing alternative programs in charter schools to identify systemic improvement measures to best serve eligible students. And there is a statute, of course, where students could become eligible to enter area learning centers, alternative learning centers, even charter schools, if they perform below performance level of pupils of the same age, a year behind coursework, pregnant or parenting, assessed as chemically dependent, victims of physical or sexual abuse, experience other mental problems, homelessness, or speak English as a second language. And charter schools have been included in this because they do also serve that population. What we're really trying to do here is to set up the pilot programs to see if there are other ways besides the testing that is done in the No Child Left Behind to see that a student is making satisfactory progress. From the Minnesota Department of Education, we find that students in these area learning centers, alternative learning centers, score 16% on standards of 10th grade reading. Versus 62% for students in traditional schools, 2% of these students meeting standards in 11th grade math versus 32% in traditional schools. So these are students who may never reach AYP. So I'll allow the testifiers here. We'll start off with, I believe, Terry Lydell, the immediate past president of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, to tell you a little bit more about it.
Welcome, Mr. Liddell.
Mr. Chairman, I am Terry Liddell, immediate past president of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs. And I want to say that I am particularly excited about being here today because just a week ago today, we were at our state conference, our 25th annual state conference for MAP. And people were enjoying 120 breakouts over the 3 days. 600 of our 700 members were there. And I was amazed at the number of people who came forward and said to me, this is something we need, Terry. We've got to have this. So I'm very pleased to be here. I hope my testimony matches their enthusiasm and drive. House File 3029, I want to address very particularly the spirit of the bill. And that is to provide area learning centers and charter schools that enroll students matching the state statute 124D.68, otherwise known as the Graduation Incentives Program. The spirit is to develop innovative assessments that measure how well the school meets the needs, the social emotional needs of the students. Develop innovative ways to structure learning experiences and governance that meet the needs of students to achieve high academic standards. And to improve the professional practice of educators through professional development that enhances their skills of systems management, data use and analysis, and alignment of all school components. There's a very key definition in this bill, and that is the definition of systemic improvement measures. And that means methods that yield data and information showing the progress of a well-oriented and ordered and repeatable process directed at student and organizational learning, for example, management, services, curriculum resources, and overall organization. The benefits of this bill is that it is aimed at the hardest-hit students in Minnesota's school system, those who are homeless, pregnant or parenting, abused, suffering mental illness, academically behind, English language learners, or experiencing mental health issues. It adjusts the school to meet the needs of the student and keep the focus on learning. It trains all staff in data use and analysis. It expands school improvement leadership to all staff people. And it assures that schools stay current with the needs of the student and our society. Systemic improvement measures are not more tests placed on students. They are instead a testing of the system that seeks to educate the student. The school is tested through data collection and analysis. Systemic thinking school could analyze such things as student test scores, graduation rates, attendance. And if these are not satisfactory, they would drill down to find the root cause of why these problems exist and then create a plan to eliminate those deficiencies and, on top of that, create data points that will tell them how well their plan is or is not working. For example, if a school finds that it has a high number of students experiencing mental health issues, it will start asking such questions as, does the staff have adequate training to work with such issues? What training can we secure? What resources are available? Are the resources we're using doing the job that they're supposed to do? This questioning and investigation would lead to a plan to beef up the school system to properly serve the students. And in addition, again, they would pile on top of that another set of data that says our plan is or is not working. This bill contains a safeguard in that it may request from the commissioner a waiver of NCLB regulations. Now, it is not our intent to go get rid of NCLB. In systemic thinking, there are agencies that have control, and the job of a systemic thinker is to say, that's what we've got. Like it or not, that's what we've got. But the programs will be gathering massive amounts of data as the kind of students they deal with and where the holes are in the instructional process. And if they should find that there is something that's wrong with state regulation or NCLB regulations, that they would be able to go to the commissioner with data that says, here's the problem. Here's the data that says it is a problem, and here's our suggestions for ways to deal with that. And at that point in time, then the call is made, does the commissioner seek a waiver of any sort? This bill also establishes an advisory board that will provide extensive and valuable understanding of the needs of the students and the schools that are subject of this bill. This bill provides for annual reports to the House and Senate Education Committees to report on progress or lack thereof. An essential part of this bill is the concept of systemic measures. And with us today is Brian Lassiter, who is the president of the Minnesota Council for Quality. And I'd like him to give you a few words about what is systems thinking.
Thank you. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Chair and Senators. I'm Brian Lassiter, president of the Minnesota Council for Quality. We're a nonprofit corporation that helps all types of organizations around the state improve their performance. Been around for about 20 years. We've helped manufacturers, service organizations, healthcare providers, nonprofits, governmental agencies, and certainly school districts and schools around the state. In our experience, and you certainly know, organizations are highly complex, and certainly schools of all types are highly complex, comprised of dozens, if not hundreds, of processes and activities that go on in every day. We found in our experience that the most effective organizations manage the complexity by using data to make decisions, a comprehensive set of measures that not only include outcomes and output, but leading indicators, more in-process measures that help make decisions and predict future performance within the organization. We support this bill in that it not only requires the basic elements of measurement within districts or within schools, but expands it to include other types of measures that give a more comprehensive view of the performance.
Mr. Chairman, having had some experience writing the proposal for one of the very first alternative schools, I understand what you're doing, and I think that it is time for some effort on this part. I did move your amendment, though, and can I make a suggestion? If you don't do it here, you'll do it at the next point. But the Senate does not follow the same method of appointing members to things like this as whatever the House does. I don't know, but instead of being appointed by the majority leader, he chairs the subcommittee on committees of the Rules Committee, which does make those appointments, and that should be stated in your that should have been the way your amendment would have. You've taken away the minority appointments. You've doubled the number, you know, two senators, two representatives. Yeah. But in the Senate, that should be appointment made by this Senate Subcommittee on Committees of the Senate Rules Committee.
Mr. Chair, so could we just eliminate on the amendment lines 6 through 10 then? Would that satisfy that?
No, you need to state, rather than it being made by the majority leader, it would be the majority leader chairs that committee.
Okay.
But that's the language that should be
that's
there.
That's acceptable.
If you can, yes, you want to make that correction here, otherwise I'm sure you'll make it at the local government.
Yes, and state and local, Senator Rest through Council Bodern has some guidelines, and they'll give you an amendment for that. But thank you for pointing that out. And we'll need
but
to.
I'll move it if you'd like, so. Because I know you're in a hurry and we're having to.
Let's see. We will move Senate File.
Senate File 3029
as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to state and local government. And I apologize, I want to see if there's anyone that has opposition to the bill before we go further. Because, as I said initially, this has been put together. There's been a lot of involvement, and it's reflected here. But if there's no opposition, no further discussion, all in favor?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Torres-Ray.
I know we're pressing for time, but I just want to make a comment because I think it's very important for this committee, for Senator Dahl, to really know that I think that what Senator Stumpf is going to try to do during the interim to move us in a direction of really looking at a plan for education is important because I understand the value of this measure and your proposal, Senator Dahl, but I am a little bit concerned about the fact that many of us, including myself, are proposing different strategies to create some measures. And I think that overall we need to have a measure for our system of education and that we need to set the standard for a very comprehensive set of measures that apply to everyone equally. But if we separate schools And some schools have some measures, and other schools have other measures. I think we're going to create a problem for ourselves. And so I want to make sure that in the future, particularly in this committee, we really take a look, a comprehensive look at what we do when we approve these measures to make sure that at the end we work together for a plan for the state of Minnesota and for all the schools, because this could create a problem for us if we move in different directions for different systems of schools in our school system.
Thank you, Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. Chairman, just a good point. It seems to me that the word measures is being used a little differently here than measurement. It's taking part of it as measures, but it is also the effort. It kind of constitutes various efforts to improve and what those constitute, not just how you measure the ultimately measure what the improvement is that's taken place. So maybe along the way, that needs to be refined a little bit for clarification. Even segments within the educational community use words differently, and it can be a bit confusing. But I think the whole mission of what you're trying to do is you've been dealing in a different environment, and you're looking for ways that you can strengthen and improve that to get assured that the young people are achieving the standards that we and expectations that we have for all. Am I on target?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. No.
Further, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pardon me, I was away from the table for a bit, so if the question's been asked, I apologize. Are you suggesting by this bill that the annual yearly progress No Child Left Behind reporting, it does not apply to ALCs and charter schools?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, no. In a systemic model, all the regulations apply, all of the testing, all of the reporting, the things we've heard here on report cards, programs that would be subject to this pilot bill would report on those things. The kinds of things that we are talking about are actually invisible to the state-level reporting in that it's what they're doing underneath to try to find out what is it that's not working or what is it that's working we need to do more of. If we were in a rural community, we might hear the term, you don't fatten a pig by weighing it. And in education, we would say, you don't make a kid smart by testing them. We have to have some instruction. We have to look at how we instruct and what we instruct in and how we motivate and how we get kids, in our terms, I don't like this term, but fixed from the mental illness issues, the rape and abuse, and all of those kinds of things, to the point where they can start learning. And that is what we would be mining in a systemic system, is how well are we doing the instructional stuff? How well are we addressing the social-emotional that gets people ready for the academics? So really, this is invisible to the state reporting. All of these programs would be expected to report. They would get a report card. They would answer to the number of things that have gone on, the accountability measures that have already been done
Thank you. I think you've answered my question, and I apologize for interrupting, but I missed that, and I support the idea. I mean, that was part of the motivation behind the report card bill, that there is other information that is useful to us in improving our schools, and so I do support that. I did have a number of students come in and say, if you do get this through, they want to be part of your pilot, and that's the White Bear Lake Area Learning Center.
Okay. Senator Olson renews her motion. All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion fails. Thank you, Senator Dahl, and testifiers.
Thank you. Motion prevails. Chair, do you know where this bill is going next?
State and local.
State local government.
And why is that? Just
because
curious.
It's creating
it creates a group.
Okay.
And it should be a short stop.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sander Sachs-Hogg and testifiers. Right after this. This is very short.
You just never know.
And members of the audience, I'm sorry. This committee started late, and there's nothing we could do about that. We will continue business as soon as our caucus is done, and that will be in room 112. But Senator Sachs-Hogg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I have the A1 amendment I would like moved.
Senator Hahn offers the A1 amendment. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Carried. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What that amendment did is basically take everything out of 2815 except Section 4. And Senate File 15, as amended, makes some changes to language on a ballot in regards to renewing existing referenda levies. And with me today is Scott Kuhnquist and Jim Grathwall and Sanwal Seth. And we all promise to be very short with this. And then if you have comments,
okay.
Questions.
Yes. Please state your support. We know who you are and your position. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Kronquist, Association of Metropolitan School Districts. We think this language actually will allow school districts to put accurate language on the ballot. Right now, even if a school district is just asking to renew an existing referendum, the ballot language has to say you may be voting for a tax increase when that's not true. So this would allow us to have a truthful question on the ballot for the voters. And so we thank Senator Saxhog for bringing this forward.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, Jim Grathwall, Minneapolis Public Schools. We think this section, this bill, puts truth back in truth in taxation. Minneapolis Public Schools will be renewing a referendum this fall. And if we chose to renew at the same level, we could just use this language as is without, as Mr. Kuhnquist says, under current law, we'd be saying something that wouldn't be true, that we'd be increasing taxes. Thanks very much, and I thank Senator Saxhog for bringing the bill forward.
Thank you, Ms. Croft.
Mr. Chairman and members, Sam Walseth with the Minnesota Rural Education Association. We, too, support this language and view it as a truth in taxation measure. We have districts going out for renewals this fall. In fact, we had one going out last fall, Bemidji, for example, just asking for a renewal. That renewal did not pass. We think there was some confusion among the citizens in that district about what was actually being requested of them and whether or not it was a tax increase. So we view this as important language to help a lot of our districts go out and get the revenue that that they need. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, long overdue. I'll move it.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify? Not all in favor. Senator Olson's motion that Senate File 2815 be recommended to pass and referred to state and local because there's election language. Indicate aye.
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 Opposed? Carry. Members, we'll recess for caucus, but for others here, we have two remaining bills. For Senator Carlson's bill, I believe Mike Berlager is here from Shakopee. Is Mike here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If there's anyone that needs to work with Senator Carlson and his testifier on that, please take the time between now and when we reconvene to do that. And I have a bill, Senate File 2420. Kent Gordon, Lee Schmidt, and I believe there's some language that the Department of Ed has worked on. Please continue that discussion, and then we'll visit those topics when we reconvene, which will hopefully be soon after 6 o'clock. We're in recess. Thank you.
Are we going to reconvene in this room?
No, we're well.
Has been to testify.